Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
My next guest has taken what used to be a 5-acre farm, is in County Wicklow, and is now rewilding it. And he was inspired by the birth of his son, which is a very nice way to do it. And it seems the results have been spectacular. The big increase in insect, plant, animal life on the site in just after a year. Jack Morley is here in studio to tell us all about it. Good morning, Jack.
Thank you, Oliver. Nice to meet you.
And we're also joined, welcome back to you, Aina Ní Launa.
Well, good to be in a while ago. I thought I'd never be invited back again after my last outing, but it's great to see you again.
I'm still bruised, but anyway.
You're all right.
You're here as our wildlife expert, of course, as well. Jack, did you buy the site in Wicklow, or how did you come to have it?
I did. I bought it a couple of years ago and have built my house on it and live there now, lucky enough to live there now. But as you say, I was motivated by the birth of my son. I am a proud nature nerd. I have, it's my thing, you know, like, you know, food or football is someone else's. But my background is in advertising and communications. So,
right, a lot of screen time.
A lot of screen time. Well, used to cameras and things. And when I had my son and we had the land, I decided I wanted to try and make a difference on the immediate area around where he's going to grow up. And I'd started managing for biodiversity or rewilding it. And to do that, I went about bringing experts in. To get advice on doing it properly, because you don't want to make any mistakes, right? So I started doing this, and because of my background, I started documenting it as well, and I started a YouTube channel, so it was something that we could look back on, even as a family, but also that people could learn along with me.
People are mad into it, aren't they?
And that's what kept it going, because I suddenly realised through all this brilliant feedback that I was getting, and since I've started an Instagram as well with kind of shorter versions, I've taken a little breather, I should note, from the YouTube, just because it's quite time consuming. I have a lot going on right now, but I am getting back to it. But I've got all these wonderful people reaching out to me all the time, and I've got amazing comments. And lots of people saying that they have land that they want to do similar things with.
As
I mentioned, I was getting all of these experts in across different areas, different habitats, other people rewilding, ecologists, learned a huge amount along the way. And immediately, like in the last year, I have noticed on the land an incredible increase in the amount of biodiversity and the amount of life, and it's become this absolutely wonderful place to hang out in. And I've planted thousands of trees, and although they're only
thousands,
I've actually planted thousands.
Can I step back a little bit and just give us an image of what it was like when your first day you set foot on it? It was a farm, wasn't it?
Four fields. So it wasn't a farm. It hasn't been a farm per se in a very long time. I mean, it's
decades.
Yes, definitely decades. Right. The cottage was just rented out, and the fields were cut and taken for use on another farm.
Oh yeah.
But
it was grassland mostly.
It was just four fields, and that was it. And there's a river as well.
Oh, a river, very nice.
Yes.
It was all separated with hedges.
Separated with hedges, and we do have some mature trees, mostly sycamore, which actually isn't native. That's one of the many things that I've learned in the last year.
Right.
And ash, which unfortunately does have its dieback, but Aina's just informing me that there is a resilience to ash dieback coming in. So
yes.
Well, we're hoping that there is. In fact, I mean, we're going to be covering this on the Mooney Show now next week. There's research done in Britain to show that the trees with the ash dieback take a long time to die, so they don't snuffle the next minute.
Okay.
So like, they'll still be weaker and weaker, but they'll produce seeds. The seeds will go into the ground, wind-blown seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have to germinate and come up through the leaf litter, which
this is good news, because
which is where all the fungus is.
Oh, right,
the fungus nabs most of them, because it's the enemy. But some of them make it, and these are the ones then that have resilience.
About 10%, is it?
Well, no, I think 30% are gone, so there's 70% of them. It's not as bad as
what
all
I meant
that.
Was good news, that we thought they were all 95% were going to be wiped out.
Well,
the
we
last
don't know
few
how many
years.
Grow, but I mean, the trees probably will, the ones that are there will be certainly affected.
And most of our native trees are ash in Ireland.
Well, no, not at all. It's only one species. We have 28 species of native trees, one of which is ash, and the other 27 are not ash. But however,
okay.
we have an abundance of ash trees.
Oh, as in individuals, yes, I get you. Yeah,
individuals.
Yeah.
And you can see the stumps of them now and how broken down they are with this awful disease.
Yeah, it
but
looks
the fact
awful,
that the fact that there are seedlings beginning to come up that have resilience to it is what okay. this paper in England has been studying. And by working on those, we might actually get resistance to it. So, I mean, there's hope. There is always hope.
So, you're thousands of trees, Jack. You weren't planting ash trees.
No, ash was the one that I couldn't plant, but I have
keep the seedlings.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And there are a few self-seeded seedlings on the land, which I'm keeping an eye on, which is fantastic to see. But everything that I've planted has been native, and that is really really important for exactly the reason we're just talking about. I'm just outside Wicklow town.
So how are you fixed for deer?
That's another thing that I've been looking into, and I talked to Ashley Glover from the Irish Deer Commission as to how I can protect my trees. I have taken a bit of a gamble, and I haven't fenced yet.
Right.
And so far, so good. But I did research first, and I did plant a native hedgerow before I planted the trees, and it wasn't touched. I have seen absolutely no evidence in terms of footprints or dropping of deer. And
deer
none of my neighbours have seen
leaves,
deer.
Oh, absolutely!
Yeah. It's their favourite food, as their absolute favourite.
How many
food.
Trees did you plant?
3,000.
3,000?
Yes, and I did part of it with the 100 Million Trees project, which I know Ayn is familiar with,
yeah.
In the Miyawaki method of planting, which essentially means planting them closer together, which encourages them to grow faster, in particular for biodiversity.
Okay.
And it's not a timber occupation, but get stuff
yes,
them all together, and then they all grow up together, like
right.
they're all beside each other.
They chat to each other.
Yeah, but whereas if you want timber, you have to have a decent amount of space for each one to be big enough to have planks.
Exactly.
But this other
yeah,
one is
yeah.
a great method of biodiversity, because okay. it really, like in 10 years, you'll have a woodland you can't see over the top of, which is great.
And are they little kind of foot, how big were the trees?
They only went in winter, yeah. So they're
lollipop sticks.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, up to my knee. So yeah, they're...
So you'll watch those.
But they're doing well. They're doing well.
When did you put them in? Just last winter?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
gone.
And what else did you do?
Well, so the way I look at biodiversity is diversity. So that's the key bit in the word for me. So what I'm trying to do is create a diversity of habitats.
Oh,
and
right.
that is, so we've already talked about the woodlands. Mm-hmm. Then we've got the wildflower meadows, a wetlands. So I've already got the river, as I mentioned, and ponds is the next big thing on my list. And I'll be talking to Brian and Gilly from Wild Acres, who are quite close to me there, to get advice on how to create ponds. And I'll definitely be creating more than one, because you don't have to create this great big lake-like thing. We can,
okay.
you can create like little things as well.
What'll they do, the ponds? I presume frogs.
Well, ponds are the number one thing I would say that you can do to bring wildlife into your garden, because at the end of the day, water is life.
Makes sense.
And they encourage all sorts of invertebrates and our few amphibians in as well.
Keep the fish out of them.
Keep the fish out of the pond.
Yes, so they'll eat everything else, and the herons will come and eat your fish, and then you'll have nothing and you'll be complaining. So don't put fish.
I have a resident heron already, believe it or not, which is fantastic to see. And he's obviously absolutely massive. And from time to time, you'd be walking along and not realise that he hasn't spotted you coming, perhaps in the tree that he tends to hang out in, and he'll accidentally jump out on you and give you quite a fright.
That must be some sight.
Yeah, and he does this kind of prehistoric call. It's very cool though.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Would you be worried about midges now with the pond still water? Isn't that an issue?
It's a factor, but midges at the same time are part of the ecosystem and they're a great food source. So
to have a still day before they'll come and bite you. How often do we have
we
still
don't,
days?
Yeah,
the wind blows them off.
We have a rare one today.
Yeah. But they're great food for bats as well. We've got I put up a few bat boxes. Yeah, yeah, with another expert. Susan Hennessy over in Bat Rehabilitation Ireland recommended Susan Kerman.
Have you any bats? I mean, bat boxes are all very well.
I have heard them so far and seen.
How can you hear? Nobody can hear bats.
This is the squeak.
I can hear a little kind of.
You must have some ears. So the lowest one is the what you call it, the lighters, and that's 20 kilohertz, and that's for the pippy streets.
You can definitely hear a squeak still.
I'm hearing something.
You have to be up late now,
You're not hearing bats hunting. I don't know what you're hearing. But however, have you got
a
bat detector?
No,
seriously, yeah.
No, I haven't got a bat detector.
40 kilohertz and 50 kilohertz.
I see a bat flying around, and they have a kind of an awkward, and I could definitely hear the squeak coming off them.
At dusk and dawn, you can see. I haven't figured out what species they are.
You should be taken in and identified as some kind of a scientific person of note. Let's put it like this.
We don't hear any squeak.
Well, no, I mean the human range of sound does not include the bats.
Yeah, okay.
20 kilohertz for children, maybe before they've banjacks themselves, but adults not. So whatever you're hearing squeaking.
I always thought that eventually it was a good sign that
they're not flying mice.
Because usually it's just kids, isn't it? They can just hear that.
Well, just that one particular species, which is only going out at 20 kilohertz.
Right.
But anyway, that doesn't take from the fact that you may well have bats.
Do you hear bats as well, Jay? You're saying you hear squeaking.
I thought I was, but I really want to go and look into this.
I have to look this up as well. Yeah, but she knows her stuff.
She does know her stuff. 100%.
Give us a bat detector and this will actually interpret them because it's an oscilloscope and it transfers it down. And we have 9 species and you probably maybe might even get up to 8 of them where you are. You won't get the horseshoes. Lesser horseshoes are cave dwelling ones over.
Yeah, pipistrelle, I'd say, is the most likely.
But there's 3 pipistrelle ones. Soprano one, which is 55 kilo. If you can hear that now, you should be in a museum paying money to come in to see you.
Now, the interesting thing, Jack, you're telling us that you've met a lot of ecologists and experts. Mm. So rewilding for you wasn't a case of just letting the thing grow, letting the fields take over and curating.
So without getting into, I suppose, the pedantics of rewilding and its original term, it did mean something at a much, much bigger scale when it started out over in North America. But I use it in a way that refers to managing for biodiversity and encouraging wildlife into your garden.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the important element of it for me. And the experts that I've met along the way have all guided me, you know, on that principle.
It's not letting it go as such, it's managing it
to encourage wildlife to be there.
Let it go as the grass is there.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the fields were managed for grass, so therefore the farmers who were growing the grass is a very greedy feeder, so you have to add nitrogen, enrich the soil, get the grass, get rid of the other things, call them rude names like weeds and get rid of them. Mm. Call them noxious weeds if you're feeling really bad.
That's a legal term now. We'll come to that in a minute.
Well, I don't know. But so therefore, you know, you have to nearly reduce the fertility of the soil in order to let the wildflowers grow. You put in yellow rattle, which is a parasitic, semi-parasitic on grass. So
it's quite pretty looking as well.
It's a pollinator itself as well.
Beauty is in the So if it's beautiful, it's
it attacks the roots of the grass.
It grows off some of the roots.
And spreads as well. Thins out the grass.
It takes
nourishment from the grass. So like it doesn't make its own food. It sort of, you know, has a go at the other one, sort of a parasitic thing. And then that weakens the grass and gives a chance then for other things to grow. And similarly, what you don't want, I mean, we have a lot of invasive species and they'll take over if you stop managing them.
Oh, I see.
So you don't want...
So you have to do what Jack is doing.
You don't want different things. You want to make sure you don't want...
Careful caretaking.
Deer are huge invasive species.
You're a fan of ragwort, ragweed?
Yes. Well, I had a wonderful lady, Ruth Wilson, from the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan come and look at the land to understand how I can encourage more wildflowers. Mm-hmm. And sowing yellow rattle, as Aina explained there, is one of the things that help thin the grass because in your soil, you're going to have a seed bank of flowers waiting to come up. And I have a really thick thatch of Yorkshire fog. It's a very heavy grass that is preventing my wildflowers from coming up.
So
yellow rattle helped, but I was advised by the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan to actually scalp my fields this September, mm-hmm. Once life has kind of finished its flourish in the grass. And that will allow the next generation of wildflowers to come up through. And then I just need to top the fields and gather the grass, which is the important thing every year, every September to come.
Cut it off. People with a wildflower meadow will be familiar with that. You cut it once.
That's the management side of it.
That's the managing of it. But the kind of wildflowers that you're, ragweed, why would they be good?
Farmers
are shouting, going, what?
Oh, no, 100%.
Stuff.
So ragwort is a fantastic looking flower for starters, but it does create issues if cattle and horses in particular eat too much of it. It can make them sick, and it needs to be removed from.
I think is it noxious to them only when it's cut and left on the ground?
No, because they're not eating. They don't eat it when it's growing.
Yeah.
So I mean, they don't eat lots of things. Cows don't eat buttercups. You think people say long ago, oh, you know, the reason why butter is yellow is because the cows eat the buttercups, and because milk is white. How would you have yellow butter? But of course, they eat everything except the buttercups, because the buttercups don't like them. Yeah. And butter is yellow because of the butter fat from eating grass in the first place. Why would you spoil a good story with the facts? So they don't. But if you cut the stuff when they're in flower and it goes into hay,
Yes, I
well,
see.
Well, then they have no dangerous option then. Yeah. But there's very little haymaking happening now at all. It's all silage, which is cut much earlier in the
that's
year
true
in the first
yeah,
instance.
Yeah.
And you can grow,
be no
you
ragweed
can have ragweed
yeah
if you want to in your own garden. It's just if it's a danger to livestock and to farming. So
but it's a very
it
important native wildflower, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's the host plant. This is another wonderful thing that I've learned about the balance of nature, right? It's the host plant for the cinnabar moth, which is a daytime flying moth, and its caterpillars, it will only lay its eggs on ragwort, and
amazing
its caterpillars will only eat ragwort. And there's lots of other examples like that. There's
it's a wonderful thing because the warning colours for insects are yellow and black. You think of bees and things with stings.
Yeah.
So the caterpillars of the cinnabar moth are yellow and black like the Kilkenny hurlers. And
that's where the name
them
comes from, the Kilkenny cats.
Well, I don't know.
I presume.
Well, I don't know because the adult cinnabar moths are the down footballers, and they're black and red and black
yeah
and red. So this particular creature is actually really must have been reading all my books because it's actually doing yellow and black for the caterpillars and doing red and black for the adults. And the wildlife don't eat it because it tastes horrible. It has these toxins or alkaloids in it that are in the plant.
And is it
so
around?
That's why they can fly around during the day. It's yeah day flying moth. Nah, 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 you can't eat me because I'm horrible. So like most moths fly at night and they keep out of the way. So
is it late July, August? It gets absolutely covered in these caterpillars.
It does, and that, you know, that moth wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that flower. And there's lots of examples of other host plants, such as the dockleaf beetle, which, as its name suggests, lives on dock leaves, and they're absolutely stunning little metallic looking goldy emerald beetles. They're wonderful to see.
Yeah, one of the docks is on that noxious weeds list.
That's right. Yeah. This is the Noxious Weeds Act of 1936, which includes ragwort and dock leaves as well.
Dock
and quite a lot of
thistles. No, just one species of thistle, the creeping thistle, because again, that would see these both the ragweed and the thistle have seeds that are like the dandelion seeds you blow in the wind. So if you have them on your land,
and spear thistle is on it as well.
Yeah, the winds will blow.
So under the Act, it's an offence for owners and occupiers of land not to prevent the spread of specified weeds, and they're specifically listed. Black grass has just been added this year.
Yeah, because that could be a weed in a farmer's field of wheat.
Does
or
that seem
or
a bit
something
a bit mad? Because these are kind of important wild.
Well, the clue is in the title, 1934.
I mean, 1936, yeah.
Well, if whatever, it certainly isn't 2036.
But it's still in force today.
Ah, yeah, but sure, there wasn't. There's things since the time of Henry VIII probably in force for marriage, God only knows. And nobody had got round to repealing.
And of course, it is specifically only on farmland.
It's only on farmland.
Which yours is not.
Yes, yeah, well, exactly.
And you don't let them go into seed and blow onto your neighbour's land, who might be over the wall. But I mean, you can have them.
Do you not let them go into seed, Jack?
No, I haven't so far. I'm only there now over just
hard
over
work
a year.
Pulling
so
out ragweeds.
There's actually not a huge amount of it on my land so far. I have a huge amount of hogweed, which is another topic of conversation.
Oh, but that's not the giant hogweed.
It's not the giant hogweed, which is very dangerous.
It's the dangerous one. The ordinary right hogweed's all right.
Yeah.
Do you have cow parsley, by the way? This is a lovely flower in May, early June.
I do. I have cow parsley. I've seen a wonderful kind of plethora of wildflowers coming up over the seasons, and that's one of the things that I love about it is month on month it keeps changing, and you know, the ultimate kind of one that you hope will come up are any kinds of orchids, because they're the kind of super rare I don't want to say Pokemon, but it is kind of like that, where you kind of want to go, come on, I want
the
get
orchids
one
come
of the rare
themselves
ones.
The seeds can last forever. What birds have you got? Have you got any seed eating
I've
birds?
Had,
any linnets, any red good poles, yellowhammers?
Yellowhammers we do have. We had a cuckoo. When the cuckoo flower came up, another wonderful wildflower, we heard cuckoo. We haven't seen it yet. Great spotted woodpecker.
I mean, the cuckoo flower has nothing to do with it.
I understood that the timing of the cuckoo calling for nesting and mating season was the same time as the cuckoo flower came up, and that's why it was named such.
And the cuckoo spit the same.
That would have made sense.
Because the cuckoo goes cuckoo and then spits on all the plants.
Damn you and your facts.
Cuckoos, you get the cuckoo spit as well. So you have cuckoo pint and you have cuckoo pint. You know what the cuckoo pint is?
No.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't speak about that. On
okay.
That's lords and ladies.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's got lots of different names.
Yeah, yeah, but pintle is an old English word for something else entirely.
Describe now that to us.
Yeah, well, it's cuckoo. Look at the lords and ladies is a lily. So it's a white lily that grows in the hedge, and it's got a sort of a cloak around it, and it has a spadix, which is a long pointy thing up the middle, which smells revolting. It smells like somebody died. And so the flies come along and smell this, think it's rotten meat, fly around it, and they think there's more rotten meat down below. Right. Down they go. There's one one-way hares, they can get in, but they can't get out.
Okay.
So they're all caught around inside, flying around like blue-ass flies, literally. And yeah. eventually another fly comes that was in another flower and is covered in the pollen of the next flower. So it comes in, pollinates the whole thing. Very the hares relax, sing as a fussag. And and then they all fly off again, getting dusted with pollen. And instead of going home to their mammies and never going into another one, they're off to another one and doing the same again.
Yeah, yeah.
So this business of this erect thing sticking up in the middle allowed all kinds of rude names for it to be called. In Irish, it's called Bud Geyer. Geyer is the Connemara word for a dog. You can look up Bud yourself.
Bud, we
and,
know, yeah.
And similarly, Cuckoo Pintle. Pintle is another word, an old English word for that same member of the whatever it is. And lords and ladies, parson in the pulpit,
yeah.
you know, all soldiers, Mickeys, all kinds of names they have on them. But anyway, that's the one that you have there, that's the arum lily. So I presume you have that in your head. And then you get berries on it in the autumn time, then just little red berries that are poisonous to us. But people aren't going around eating berries. So that's a wonderful thing to have. But if you get one, and it's probably too late now, you want to get it earlier in the year, you get all those insects inside in it, and it's great. Now, some people can smell the thing and it's revolting. And other people can't smell it at all because they have a genetic ability to smell or not smell.
Oh, that. Really?
So you can get them to have a good sniff. And if they can't smell it, they might sniff up some of the insects. You can
come here,
have
Jack,
fun with that.
What else are you seeing in terms of the wildlife returning, because you're seeing some creatures and animals as well, aren't you?
Yeah, all the ones in mammal terms that you'd expect with the foxes and badgers. Haven't seen them yet because I'm dying to get camera traps.
Someone is just asking that, do you have wildlife cameras on the text?
It is the next big thing on my list, and obviously it would be pretty key for the old YouTube channel. So it is big on the list. However, I have on the banks of the river seen, and my neighbours have told me they've seen otter.
Otter,
I keep seeing their footprints and their droppings around.
They have a very distinctive smell, the droppings. Have you been smelling them?
I have not been smelling them, but I have heard
this.
They
smell like fish.
They smell like fish, do they?
Yeah, you have a very fishy, tarry smell as opposed to dog droppings or anything else. But if you smelt the wrong thing, dog droppings smell revolting.
There's a random message here saying ask about briars. Oh, you'd have plenty of briars, I'm sure, because they'd be flowering now at the minute, wouldn't they?
They are, and in fact, one of my hedgerows is entirely briar. So
they're wonderful for bees. They're an excellent thing. The flowers are open and they're really good for bumblebees. You should have an open day and invite people along to pull blackberries.
Do all briars produce blackberries?
Yes.
All of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's no bramble.
That's
in
August.
I get such a bounty towards the end of the summer. Like it's absolutely brilliant. But it's also great for nesting as well for a lot of our bird species. And on the bee thing, I didn't realise when I said about doing this that we have 102, currently anyway, we have 102 species of bee here in Ireland, and only one of them produces honey.
And we'd only 101. Did we get a new one since?
Apparently we've got, and I couldn't tell you which one it is. Actually, it might be the ivy bee.
But that was the 101th.
But that was the 101st. Okay, we've had another one since. That is set up home here.
Flower bee. We used to have 99, which annoyed me enormously. We used to have 99 species of bees, and then they discovered the hairy-footed flower bee and the ivy bee more or less at the same time, and they went up to 101. So that's what we have. So we've one honeybee, 20 bumblebees, and the rest are the solid.
The ivy itself is important, isn't it?
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah.
When does ivy flower?
October.
In October?
October, yes. The last one to get flowers.
What is the flower on?
Well, there's no petals on it. I mean, it's just loads and loads of nectar and pollen, and it's really good food for wasps who are looking for nectar at that time of the year, and for the ivy bee, which is a solitary bee, gathers up the pollen, feeds its young with that. And
so when you see the little berries on the ivy, which are the black things you see in the wintertime, that's
in
February. So obviously the flower comes first in October.
Yeah, in October, yeah.
And what does it look like? Does it look like the green?
It looks like a little green thing with yellow things.
Yes, okay.
Go and have a look and see, because the ivy grows in the ground and it has ivy shaped leaves, but then when it gets to the light it grows up, and then the leaves change completely. They're a different shape, they've more nourishment, and they're able to put out there. So you won't get the ivy flowers on the ivy on the ground. It has to be the ivy going up in the air and hanging out and getting its flowers then.
It's quite a project you're doing, but you're absolutely loving it.
I'm really enjoying it, and I love that it develops and it changes every year. I was sitting out in the field yesterday with my son and just watching him. He's actually very impressive already. He's only 2.5, but you know, I'd ask him, what's that flower called? And he'll say trefoil.
And really?
What? And he'll differentiate it from a daisy, I mean a buttercup, you know, because they're both the same yellow but in slightly different shapes.
This is whole university, it's totally normal to
Yeah, it's just, and that's, you know, that's really what I wanted, because I grew up in a very, I was lucky enough, my grandparents lived down in Wexford, and I'd go down and it was always very nature rich down there, and I'd learn a huge amount there. And I just wanted that for my son, and to try and make some kind of positive impact on the biodiversity loss here in Ireland.
So have you log piles and
I have micro habitats.
Bug hotels.
Yeah, I do.
Bug
I do.
Buggy and palace.
Love those, yeah.
I did. I found an old tree stump and I drilled holes into it to encourage the solitary bees. And
that's what you
I've
do.
I've seen some of them do move in there already.
And sand. You want piles of sand as well if you can.
Piles
of sand. A few pellets of sand over in the corner.
On the tree trunk.
No, on the ground.
Oh, okay. Separate.
Yeah, separate. Like a few,
okay. What's that good for?
To create a bank for the
for the bees.
Lot of the
bees. Yes. For the solitary bees who mind the mining bees to build holes in the ground. Do you know what a pellet is?
No.
Oh, that's a good Monaghan word. I thought you'd know that. Pellet. That's why I said a pellet, just threw it into the conversation, thinking you'd be familiar
a
with
it. A cleg is kind of a...
A cleg is a horse fly.
A
pellet is a basket for collecting potatoes. Two handles on it.
Oh,
and the full of that is just a little heap. So if you have a little heap of something, it's a pellet. Yeah, there you are. I'm glad I came on the programme.
Word of the day. I was going to ask you then.
Put out a few pellets of sand and see what you
come
in.
You're still doing the marketing. Is that what your job is now? Or are you still
I'm still freelancing in the advertising world, which I absolutely love. But I'm trying to move more into communicating nature issues in Ireland, because I have noticed that we're quite innately traditional in our communication of nature issues here in Ireland, in that we create wonderful books and TV shows and things that
and radio programs
and radio
we've had
programs
for the last 25
sure.
years. That still in all, the only one in RTE is the Moody Goes Wild. It's on for the last 25 years. Wildlife on the wireless.
Would all absolutely have their place and are super important, and I consume them.
Yeah, you're adding to it.
I want to try and get everyone involved a little bit more and reach out a little bit further than perhaps the people.
One of the things people will be asking is, because land is expensive in Ireland, trees are expensive. Was this an expensive project for you?
So the land was, that was work really hard and get a mortgage situation.
Yeah.
However, the rewilding situation has not been. So far, because there are wonderful organisations all around the country who, and there are grants available as well, who do give out trees for free to projects that they want to help out. The 100 million trees project being one of
them. And the All Ireland Pollinator Plan is very flahula
for advice.
But look, the best thing to do is follow both of you what you're doing. Jack Morley, thank you so much. We just search Rewildlife is your
The Rewildlife on Instagram and YouTube. Yeah,
Rewildlife on Instagram. And
10 o'clock on a Monday night for me.
There you go, Aina and the rest of the team on Mooney Goes Wild on RT Radio 1. Thanks a million and good luck
to
both of you. And enjoy the buzz for the summer now, Jack.
I will indeed.
Chat to you again, Aina. A couple of texts have come in actually saying we have bats in our barn and they squeak. Someone else says I definitely hear bats. Quite a few people saying they also hear the bats squeak. And I think Aina was just saying that there's something to do with the bats that we might be hearing. I must ask her now, we'll find out, because I'm mad to know. Someone's texting us from Kerry. Rented accommodation in a holiday estate which is being strimmed, mowed and sprayed to death. It's very depressing. And just saying we need a lot of education in this country as the practices are rampant and increasing, says a listener, inventory. So that's where when the roundup gets going on verges and it just kills everything and it looks kind of grim, doesn't it? And someone else says, look after nature and humans' future is bright. Yes, indeed. Love the segment there on rewilding. Education is important for us all to make small changes and choices to support biodiversity. And another, as Rachel says, look after nature and humans' future is bright. And should enjoy the nature as the sun shines this week.